What's up, all you heretics? It's the Religionist Speed Podcast. I'm Matt Overstreet.
And I'm Chris Huffman.
And we are back once again, been in our two-week break. We got a lot of news this week, actually.
We've got a lot to cover.
Yeah, and I know we went through everything last time. We were actually really proud of ourselves for doing the whole docket.
Yeah.
We might not do it this time.
Yeah, it's okay, though. That's what the next podcast is for.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll do an extra secret podcast.
Secret podcast.
Yes, that's what we do. We release a secret podcast. We tell nobody.
Only the true heretics can find it.
Yes. I'll put like little clues in all the media that we do. And then
there we go.
It'll be like a what do they call those?
Like the Q drops?
Yeah, it'll be like Q drops, but you know, for sane people.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a name for ARGs, augmented reality game.
Oh, where they kind of hide something and you actually have to go to a certain location to unlock it.
Right. Or like a lot of, that was really popular. I think it started with the Cloverfield movie.
Okay.
They did a whole lot of ARG stuff. Like they had like websites dedicated to like the fake corporations and stuff. And you could like learn more about like the background of what's going on. And
they really did a lot of promotion for that movie.
Yeah.
And then the movie wasn't a bad movie, but I don't think it lived up to the hype they put around it.
No, and then it gave a lot of people motion sickness.
Yeah, yeah. But as a kid, I grew up loving the old school Godzilla movies.
Exactly, yeah.
So seeing one from the street,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you always see those from like a god perspective. Like, oh, here's the world's top scientist, and here are the leaders, and here's the fighter pilot who's going to drop the bomb. But
right.
You don't see like the people on the street beyond just pointing, screaming, and running.
Yeah.
You know, 2 hours of them just trying to survive.
Right. No, I actually really like that movie. But anyways, that's a topic for a different podcast.
Absolutely.
Maybe we should do like a kaiju fucking monster movie podcast.
I think
podcast.
I would be way down for that.
There's a lot of them out there. So
yeah.
But no, let's get into some automotive and racing news. There's a whole lot of stuff. I want to start off with something that everybody should be taking a little more seriously than maybe they do. Helmets.
Yes. You know, people don't tend to think about it. You put a lot of money into your car, and you spend a lot of time practicing, and parts and tires are expensive.
Right.
But you only have one head.
Yes. You only get one, and it's easily damaged.
Yep, easily damaged.
We are very frail creatures when it comes down to it.
We really are, and our hobby can be dangerous.
Yes. So there are some racing series that will just allow pretty much any helmet, like a DOT helmet or stuff like that,
yeah.
Calling you out PPIR.
Yeah, like Grid Life, they'll let you show up with a motorcycle helmet.
Will they at Grid Life?
They let me.
A Grid Life or PPIR?
Oh, it was just PPIR.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Track Attack.
Yeah.
Yeah, Track Attack doesn't care, which I kind of get because it's lower speed stuff. You're just on the infield. You know, I don't even get out of second gear. So it's like you're barely going above the speed limit. So I kind of get that. But still, I do think safety is important, and so does SNELL. SNELL is the certification. It's not really a official thing. It's unofficial, actually.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're just like an independent thing. But their standards are kind of like the gold standard for racing helmets, and they've just recently released their SA 2020 regulations or specifications. So the SNELL certifications are better than DOT certifications. For one, they are made for automotive racing specifically. And that includes, you know, impacts with roll cages, which can be a lot worse than anything else.
And that can happen just from hard acceleration. You don't even have to hit anything.
Right. That's also why they say not to drive a car with a roll cage on the street without a helmet. Because, once again, your head is squishy. Roll bars aren't.
Yep.
And then, like you were saying, they do have more flame retardant resistance,
yes,
than like a DOT helmet. Because, yeah, generally, if you're on a motorcycle, motorcycle catches on fire, you can get off the motorcycle.
Yeah.
And if you're in a car, maybe you're going to be trapped in there a little bit longer.
Yeah, you could be trapped in there with a fire, and that's no good.
Right.
I remember seeing a Formula Drift event where Pat Mordaunt, he was, I think, the youngest drifter to ever get a pro license. He got it when he was 13.
Jesus.
Yeah. Talented kid. But some of the drivers were actually spraying out some of their fire suppression to save weight.
Oh, God, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, and they announced that they figured out that if you kept 3 pounds of pressure, it was enough to satisfy the judges.
Oh, really?
But it was just enough to kind of spray. And I watched him go off the track into the kitty litter at Road Atlanta. The oil pipe off of his turbo had slipped off, sprayed oil onto the engine. That started a fire, and he hit his fire suppression. So you see the fire go out for a second, and then it burst back into flames.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was able to get out of the car. Luckily, he wasn't hurt, but his day was done.
Right.
Because his car had, had burned.
The car is just going to burn to the ground at that point.
Yeah, I talked to Takeano, who's the guy who actually taught Pat Mordaunt. He said, you know, he walked by him. He's like, really, Pat? 3 pounds?
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll go into fire systems in a future episode, I think, because that should be a thing, a discussion all on its own, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to that, and it's more than just having a little fire extinguisher strapped to your floorboard somewhere.
Yeah.
But the SA 2020 rules, basically, every 5 years, Snell comes out with a new certification. So my helmet actually is SA 2010.
Okay, so two regulations.
Two regulations ago. And usually racing series let you go two back, or one back.
Okay.
One back.
So you might have to get another one for your life.
Yeah, it's time for me to get a new one, which I want to get a closed face helmet now anyways. The open face helmet is A, dorky looking, and B, just not, you know, not as protective.
It is funny how the open faced helmets, even with the DOT helmet, they look so much dorkier than the mask.
Yeah, they do. SA 2020 is a continuation of SA 2015. Basically, just tightening up the regulations a little bit, making them a little safer. The biggest difference is now all SA 2020 helmets have to have provisions for Hans devices or neck restraints.
Oh, neat. Okay.
So that's really cool, because even the kind of quote unquote budget line helmets will now be able to use Hans devices.
That's awesome. What are the prices on a budget line Snell 2020 helmet?
I mean, you can get them down to like a couple $100.
That's not bad.
No, I would suggest spending a little bit more on that. Usually the cheaper ones, the fitment is kind of wonky.
Oh, okay.
And bad fitment on a helmet is never good.
No.
But, you know, you could also maybe score a deal on an SA 2015 at this point too. Maybe if people are still trying to get out their old stock of SA 2015 helmets, they might be clearancing them. So I would check that out, because that will last you at least until 2025.
Yeah.
So,
and that's a reasonable investment, especially if you get a good deal on the older one.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go with 2020, just because that'll give me a little bit extra time.
Yeah. You'd be good for 10 years.
Right. Pretty much. So, it also, the certifications are, they're trying to get more in line with the FIA certifications.
Oh, cool.
At this point, if you get an SA 2020 helmet, I think a lot of them you could just go drive Formula One cars if you wanted at that point.
Yeah, or WRC.
Or WRC,
which
yeah.
is a sport I would never want to drive without a helmet.
God, yeah. I wouldn't want to drive a WRC without like the best like $10,000 helmet I could buy with neck restraints and oof.
Yeah. Going sideways through trees at 100 miles an hour.
Right. Yeah, if you are going to go racing, do yourself a favor. There's an old saying, buy once, cry once. So just spend the money and get yourself a good helmet. And I do recommend, so there's a, if you're in Denver here, there's a company called Wine Country Motorsports. They sell a lot of helmets, race suits, shoes, gloves, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I don't know what is the deal, how they're going to do this with COVID, because that might be a bit of a problem. But I do always suggest trying on helmets, because everybody's head is a different shape.
Yes.
Every helmet is slightly different.
Yeah.
So even though it's the right size, might not be the right shape for your head.
Yeah. And even if you have an older helmet that maybe fit you before.
Right.
You know, I have an old DOT helmet that, you know, I used at PPIR. And when I bought it, it fit me really well. I tried on a few helmets and I found the one that worked. It's a bit of a stuffed job now.
Yeah.
On my head. It's not very comfortable.
Yeah. Well, since I grew out my hair, that's a difference.
It's a big difference, right?
I wouldn't have thought so. But yeah, getting on my helmet now, it's way tighter than it was before.
Yeah. And I didn't think about, I figured hair, okay, whatever. You can cram hair down into anything. But yeah, long hair.
Sorry, I just, the way you said that. I don't know where I was even going with that in my head. It just like doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't.
The word cram, just
like the word moist.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so go do your research and get yourself a good helmet. Like I said, you can get budget helmets for a couple $100, but if you have the money, spend a little more. it's worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Don't get a helmet just because you have to. Get a helmet because, hey, if I crash, I want to, you know, not have permanent brain damage.
Yeah, because that can really put a hitch in your racing career.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. So that is that. We'll go on from preaching, which I guess we're religion of speed. We should do some preaching, right?
Right, yeah. But we had a whole preaching episode last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. So let's not do that too much. I want to mention, if you guys haven't seen the MX5 Cup finish from Sebring a couple weeks ago, go watch the video. It's on NBC Sports YouTube channel. It is the closest three-way finish I think I have ever seen.
This is wild to see. It looks like, if you've ever seen Ford versus Ferrari, the finish that they staged at the end of that movie so that Ford would look good.
Right.
It looks like that, but this is a legitimate finish.
Yeah.
These guys are you can tell they're swapping paint even as they're crossing the finish line.
Right. They're so tight together. They're literally like rubbing tires, and it's three of them coming across the finish line. So let's see if I can get the names of the drivers, because I don't follow MX5 Cup all that close, which I probably should. So we got Wagner, Carter, and Roland. Yeah, they finished, the guy in second finished 0.001 seconds behind the guy in first.
Basically at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, at what point do you call a tie?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, they should have had a, you know, all three of these guys, they should have made the podiums the same height.
Right? Like, technically, these trophies are different, but yeah, you guys did it.
You guys all just stand at the same level.
Right? Yeah, because it even says in this article from Grassroots Motorsports that the 0.001 second margin of victory is the second closest finish in MX5 Cup history.
Wow.
What's the first?
That must have been a tie. That had to be a tie.
Right.
I don't know what else it could be unless, I mean, do these stopwatches go out another decimal place?
I don't think so. And at that point, that could be a timing error, too.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this could have
been
a timing
error. That's like quantum error.
Yeah. That's the point where we don't even understand how to measure units of measurement small.
The rotation of the Earth could offset your timer a little bit. Like,
but it really speaks to how close something like a spec car series like this is.
Right.
Because it's not like, you know, watching a Porsche and a Corvette race where mm-hmm. the Corvette might be a little bit faster on the straight and the Porsche is a little faster through the corners and the course and the drivers make huge differences. These are the same cars driven by very talented drivers.
Yeah. Yeah. And the amount of money they put into these cars is getting ridiculous too. Like to make them all that equal.
Yeah.
Actually takes a lot of work. Like, it is a spec cup, yes.
Yeah.
But you'd be shocked how much money goes into like rebuilding those engines to quote unquote stock specifications. But I remember back in the day, I knew a guy who had an MX5 cup car back then, you know, Miata cup. And he was like a local racer back in Michigan, but he bought pistons from Mazda and he bought like 12 of them. So that way they could weigh each one and find the four lightest that matched.
Just working within manufacturer quality control deviation.
Exactly.
So we're talking about probably a difference of less than a gram.
You know, these days, everything's really close.
Yeah.
But especially older stuff, especially Miata stuff.
Yeah.
Like Mazda stuff. There was actually quite a bit of variance.
In those 12 pistons.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact amount. Like, I would be bullshitting you if I gave even any sort of guess. But it was significant enough that, like, if you're balancing an engine, it will make a difference.
Wow.
Yeah, did that with the connecting rods. Like, it was pretty ridiculous, the things they would do. Forgot to turn off your phone again. One of these days, we'll get that down. But yeah, so when you consider the amount of time and money that people putting in developing these cars to make them that equal.
Yeah, I had no idea he bought three times the pistons he needed.
Right.
Considering the fact that he could have, you know, you could easily take those other remaining 8 pistons, use them to rebuild a Miata street car.
Right.
And make two Miata customers very happy.
But in a Miata street car, you can modify the pistons. You can, you know.
Yeah.
You can just, however they counterbalanced the rotating assembly. I'm assuming they just remove material.
I guess they'd have to remove it at a very exact location, and I don't know. I'm not a machinist.
Yeah, I've never actually looked into that.
Yeah,
but
it would be interesting to see though. I would love to see someone that meticulous put an engine together.
Yeah, get on Moto IQ's page on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So those are the old sport compact car guys. Mike Kojima is the main guy, but his engine builds that they do, it's pretty. They're just fun to watch and just see them put together. I don't know, building engines. Like watching building engines is like the ASMR for me. Like I can just sit there and watch that. Like people put together an engine all precisely, you know,
just makes you feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Cause I don't get enough of that kind of shit during the day. I actually come home and watch other people work on cars.
It says you're in the right industry.
Cause I'm fucking weird.
Yeah. It says you are in the right industry.
Right.
If you do anything all day and then you get off and you do it for free, that says quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Bondurant Driving School, which is one of the oldest driving schools ever, I think, maybe, or racing schools.
Is it in America?
It might be. Okay. I don't know which one. I think Bondurant started like the 60s or 70s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But back when people were like, why do you need to go to school to learn to drive a car? Just go drive the car.
Yeah.
You know? But Bondurant is no more, unfortunately. But in its place now is Radford Racing School. So, Ant Anstead, Jensen Button, and Mark Stubbs, which I don't recognize Mark Stubbs' name, but I guess he's a car designer.
Okay.
They got together recently and revitalized the Radford Coach Builders, which was a British coach building, car building
company. Okay, so they built like coaches for horse-drawn carriages.
Well, this is coach builders in the way like small car manufacturers are considered coach builders.
Oh, right. It's a British term, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Because the British don't know how to speak English, even though they invented it. But as part of that, they also bought up the old Bondurant Racing School, and they renamed it Radford Racing School, and they're going to be actually expanding on it and doing a whole bunch of stuff. So
I think this is cool. I went to Skip Barber Racing School, and it was a blast. I mean, what you learn, and honestly, probably one of the happiest days of my life, getting to drive cars that weren't mine very, very fast around a track.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know Jensen Button probably won't be there all the time, but you might have the opportunity to be taught by him.
I mean, if anybody can come up with a curriculum, I would think Jensen Button could.
Yeah. And I feel like out of most of the Formula One drivers I've seen, he's like more photogenic. He interviews very well.
Yeah, he does.
And I think that's going to, like, having him as the face of something like this is going to do well for mm-hmm. for that brand.
Well, and I know we were talking earlier, and you haven't kept up with Wheeler Dealers and stuff, so you don't know who Ant Anstead is, but he's gotten pretty big, especially if you follow any of the Motor Trend stuff, which, ironically, this article is on Hot Rod, which is owned by Motor Trend, and he's part of that. So there may be some, like, you know, intermingling there, but that's the auto industry in general.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're big names, so I feel like that's going to bring in big money. And apparently, it's also bringing in Dodge, which I think was part of Bondurant before.
Okay.
But, yeah, so Dodge is kind of like their main car sponsor.
See, that's cool. I mean, if you can take a Challenger around a track and handle it, you can handle about anything.
Right? That's going to be a challenge. God damn it, I didn't mean to do that.
Hey, that's a good thing. Accidental wordplay. Gotta love it.
I just like bummed myself out with that pun. But yeah, they're going to be doing all your road course stuff. They just rebuilt the road course. Scrapped the old one entirely.
And this is down in Arizona.
This is down in Arizona. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mention that. This is Chandler, Arizona, which if you're listening in Denver again, isn't far from here.
No.
And they're also expanding now to do NHRA drag licensing. So if you run faster than 9 seconds, you're supposed to have an NHRA drag racing license.
And you need a parachute and a roll bar too, right?
Yes.
Most tracks.
At most tracks, yeah. So if you want to get that, you can go to I'm going to keep calling it Bondurant now. Radford Racing School. They're going to still have open wheel stuff. Formula cars, you know, drag racing, road course stuff, whatever you really need to do. They're also going to be doing just like teen driving schools, like the don't know if you had that, like advanced kind of driving schools.
Yeah, where it's kind of a defensive driving.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. I heard actually there was a driving school in the UK. I don't know if you remember the original Black Stig from early Top Gear.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, Top Gear does a thing where every time the Stig outs himself as the Stig, the BBC would fire him and then hire a new Stig.
And they would also kill him off in the show.
Yeah, and then kill him off in the show. And in this case, he drove a turbo or a nitrous, I think it was a nitrous injected Jag off of the end of an aircraft carrier.
I don't remember that one. That was, I think that was really early days.
It was really early when the Stig, before the Stig wore white.
Because wasn't there one that they put like the turbo off like a big diesel truck onto some little tiny car?
Oh, yeah. I think that was how they killed off the Ben Collins Stig.
Yeah.
Before they found a little baby Stig in the manger in Israel.
I love the Stig lore.
Yeah. That there's lore surrounding this guy who never speaks.
Right.
But the original Stig started up one of those teen driving classes in the UK.
Okay.
You know, kind of using his name, you know, learned to beat the Stig, which was really cool because, you know, his whole thing was safety.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I love to drive fast and I would say I'm a reckless person, but learning how not to hit things really brings down the bill.
Yeah. Well, in general, American driving schools are just a complete joke.
Yeah. Yeah. They just teach you how to obey the laws.
Yeah. They teach you how to parallel park and here's what a stop sign looks like. And that's pretty much it.
I've been to court order defensive driving 4 times.
Of course you have.
And I've learned almost nothing about how to drive from those.
Yeah.
I learned about the laws. I've learned how to avoid tickets, but not by driving safely, really, just because I learned their tactics.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a, you know, bigger problem with the American education system, but that's very true. They don't teach you anything but how to pass a test, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. They teach you how to take the test.
Yeah.
Because that's how they're graded.
Right. Exactly. So a defensive driving school, if you have any young people, or if even you're just like 16, just got your license, hell, if you're 20 and you haven't done any performance driving or stuff, defensive driving schools are a good idea.
Yeah.
You will actually learn something.
Yeah. I mean, learning how to handle a car once it's over the limit, spending time on a skid pad.
Yeah.
And you can get sideways at 3 miles an hour on a skid pad.
Right.
And you learn how to actually, you know, react and not panic in that situation.
Yeah. Because you don't want your first time being in a slide to be sudden, surprised, and not know what to do.
Right. That's how you end up hitting a telephone pole backwards.
Right. So, yeah, going out there and getting on a skid pad. Skid pads are just great because then I wish there was one around here we could just, like, rent.
That would be so cool.
Like, if I ever have my own little place, I'm just having a skid pad people can come rent. Because just, like, if you're trying to learn how your car handles at the limit, a skid pad is just great.
Yeah, it's the safest way because it brings those limits down to, you know, parking at the mall speeds.
Right. Well, and it's even better than like an autocross because you're just doing one continuous corner.
Yeah.
So you can be like, oh, you can just feel it. Okay, if I give it a little more, it understeers. If I let off, it oversteers, you know, and you can really fine tune from there.
Yeah, I can tell your front wheel drive mindset by that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have as much experience with the rear-wheel drives, unfortunately.
Oh, I understeer like crazy when I get behind the wheel of an FF, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited. I have to look up the pricing, because unfortunately racing schools are expensive, but I have a feeling I need to go do one.
Dude, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. And I'd be willing to go with you. That'd be great. We could do a Religion of Speed excursion.
Yeah. Where we go learn how to drive fast
out of the studio.
Yeah. So yeah, once again, it's Radford Racing School. Look it up. It's pretty close to Denver. Get your ass down there, give them some money so that way they stay in business. All these racing schools going out of business is kind of sad.
It's really sad. I think there was a Corvette school in Virginia that went under too.
Yeah.
And Skip Barber's gone now.
Yeah, Skippy's been gone for a while.
Yeah, it's really sad. Yeah. I don't know if Takeyano still does his one at Willow Springs, but that's another great one. Especially with that one, it's not a classroom setting. You get one-on-one time.
Oh, okay.
Wow. It was just me and he didn't teach me on day one, but on day two, I just basically hung out with Taka all day and talked about drifting.
I mean, I'd pay money just for that.
Yeah, that's how I learned that embarrassing story about Pat Morda.
Yeah. So I think it was a couple podcasts ago at this point, we talked about the Honda Civic Type R crate engine.
And what we were hoping people would do with it.
Right. Well, 1552 is kind of fulfilling all of our dreams with it by building the most ridiculous shit, which is a 96 Accord wagon.
Yes.
With a Type R drivetrain? Oh my God.
This is exactly the kind of thing I wanted to see.
Right.
You know, like, I was thinking somebody would have done it in a Civic first, but the Accord wagon, awesome.
Right.
Yeah. I want to see this. I want to see this as a finished product. I think this is going to be neat. And I think when they show up to an import meet with this, we're going to, all of a sudden, the internet's going to explode.
Right.
And we're going to see this engine put in everything.
I hope so. Because last time we were talking, I had mentioned that they were only selling them to racing teams or people that were part of Honda Performance Development.
Yeah.
But it seems like from reading this article that they've opened it up now.
Good.
And so they gave one to 1552, who's building this Accord wagon. Apparently somebody else is building a CRX, and somebody else is building an S2000.
An S2000?
Yeah.
So they're already going to do a rear-wheel drive setup with this.
I'm really excited for that.
I'm too.
I'm hoping they develop, like, trans adapters and shit.
Yes, and possibly an oil pan that can straddle a power steering rack.
Yeah. So all these cars are going to be at SEMA, I believe.
Okay.
Because Honda wants to get the word out. Hey, if you want these engines, they're available now. They haven't really given too many details on what the 1552 Accord is going to look like. It's all kind of just pictures of the engine in this article, and then some pictures of the engine bay, which is a clean-ass engine bay.
Yeah.
They just shaved everything.
Wow.
And of course, it's going to be a massive intercooler.
But the engine bay still looks complete. This car still has a firewall and...
I mean, it still looks like it's, you know, something doable, you know?
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, it looks like Mountain stuff in here all over the place too, which is just weird because Mountain is primarily Ford.
Interesting. So, okay.
But I guess they just go where the money is too, you know?
Hey, if you can fabricate a set of mounts... So that anybody can do this, they can buy it off the shelf.
Right.
I don't care what you usually work with.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder if the mounts are different than other K-Series engines.
I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. I want to know if, you know, you can salvage a set of K20 mounts from an RSX or K24 mounts from a CRV.
Right, and just plop them in and it works.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because Hondas are kind of weird with that. I know when people were doing K-Series swaps at first, it was like, well, you get this mount from a... RSX, and you get this mount from a CRV, and you can put it in your 87 Civic, and you're like, what?
Who figured that out?
Right? I do like the one picture they have on here of the, just, it was like a maroon Accord wagon at some point, just being pushed into the shop. Just looks like,
yeah, this is the car that, this car dropped kids off at school, this car got groceries,
right?
And now it's gonna make history.
Yep, now it's gonna be probably, I'm assuming they're going to tune it, so it's going to be a 400 horsepower freaking turbocharged. Actually, they might do more. I don't know what they're going to do. I wonder if they're going to build one or just probably just put the stock engine in there, I'd imagine.
You think just the stock Type R engine?
Yeah, because I think if they're dealing with Honda Performance Development, you know, they want to show off, here's our crate motor, not like, oh, hey, you could take a Type R engine and build it crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, a stock Type R motor in this chassis is going to feel pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited to see this. And I think it's cool. Can you imagine being the person who bought this car new?
Right.
From Honda, you know, just to have a responsible car and then it's going to be at SEMA.
Right.
Like, that's really, really neat.
Yeah. People don't really think about, like, the history of the cars that they buy and stuff like that. But, you know, at one point that person, you know, it's a wagon, so they most likely had kids.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, they transported kids in that thing, and just the life a chassis lives. It's like, you know, if walls could talk type thing. It's like if a chassis could talk. It's like the stories it would tell.
Tell me about the geography teacher that bought you.
Right. And now we're going to thrash you.
Yeah.
You're going to do burnouts now. Have you ever done a burnout? No, we're going to do burnouts.
You're going to learn to do burnouts.
So I don't know what SEMA is going to look like this year. I'm hoping it's kind of back to normal-ish.
When is it this year?
That's a good question. It's usually in the fall, I want to say.
I'd love to get some passes if anyone's listening, wants to give Religion of Speed some press passes to SEMA. Right. That'd be awesome.
I don't know. I don't know what the stipulations are for getting press passes.
I know that you have to be part of the industry to go, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, if you like, if we show that, hey, we have a podcast, we have a website, we have a YouTube channel, yeah, is that enough to be considered press?
I think we should try this experiment.
Yeah, we got to find out.
Yeah.
I don't think it's actually all that hard to get into SEMA if you really want to, from what I understand.
Okay. That's awesome.
Speaking of race car builds that we'll probably see at SEMA, but this one we're going to probably see before that at the Pikes Peak International Hill Climb, is a Tesla Model 3 modified by Evasive Motorsports.
I'm excited to see this because I know that, you know, you see a lot of boosted setups running for the mm-hmm. Pikes Peak Hill Climb, and you have to adjust everything for levels at higher altitudes than when you start.
Right.
And I think using an electric setup kind of eliminates a lot of that.
I mean, yeah. Volkswagen proved that with their IDE crazy car that just smashed the record, you know, a couple years ago. That was all electric, and that thing just destroyed the record because it didn't have that altitude loss.
And is it still holding the record?
Oh, it's going to hold. I think that thing's going to hold the record for until some other manufacturer comes around and decides to be fucking crazy. That thing's going to hold the record. It smashed the record by like 30 seconds or something.
Holy.
Maybe oh, wow. More. Yeah.
Yeah, 30 seconds? That is insane in racing. That's an eternity.
I'd have to look it up, but yeah, it just destroyed. And that was better than that Peugeot driven by
Sebastian Loeb.
Yeah.
Yeah, the god on four wheels.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were discussing this a little bit earlier. I think the hill climb and any sort of like sprint race type thing, like the hill climb, I think we're going to see them adopt electric cars a lot faster than we're going to see any sort of endurance racing.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, because with endurance racing, you have to worry about charging, swapping out battery packs.
Right.
But yeah, something like this, sprinting, drag racing,
mm-hmm.
I think the electric cars are going to end up taking over. I think it's going to get to the point in the hill climb where electric cars are given their own class.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder what class this is going to be running in, because, you know, I would think at this point the people that organize this are going to know, hey, electric cars have this big advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not having that drivetrain loss at higher altitudes. So I wonder if they're going to do their own class or if this is just going to be an exhibition class. Most of those cars, you know, every manufacturer brings out cars. It seems Acura has been the last few years. They always bring out some like TSX that just has a cage. Nissan brought out a Leaf 2 years ago.
Really?
It was actually pretty quick.
Was it all-wheel drive?
I don't know. I didn't look. I was going to look up what they did to that Leaf, but I was actually surprised how quick it ran.
Yeah, I think, you know, right now electric cars are still somewhat of a novelty. We're mm-hmm. getting to the end of that.
Yeah.
Once they're more mainstream, I think we're really going to see, it's going to be like when the Audi Quattro entered WRC, and it's like all-wheel drive, you know, on dirt, and it's like that is a clear advantage.
Right.
And it got to the point where that had to be moved into a different class, and now everyone runs all-wheel drive. That's the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be sad when internal combustion is just going to be in a historic class.
But, yeah.
But I think that's what we're going to see. I think that's what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you know, nothing stops the march of progression.
Nothing.
So, you know, we can either embrace it and have fun, or we can do what, you know, Lancia was doing back in the rally days of like, no, we're still going to do two-wheel drive. And they kind of held on to that for a little bit longer than they should have.
And they made the only two-wheel drive rally car to ever beat the Audi Quattro.
They did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're going to see, you know, those competitions and stuff, but eventually it's going to go, you know, everything's going to go electric. Everything went four-wheel drive then. Everything's going to go electric now.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're going to see. But, you know, I'm happy racing survives.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it takes a different form.
Yep. It's not as visceral, but at the same time, the speeds are so much more. Like, it's just a different experience anyways.
And also, there's a lot of environmental protests surrounding the Pikes Peak Hill Climb.
Yeah.
Because people love to hike up mm-hmm. there. And, you know,
and they don't like a crashed car being on their hiking trail.
And, you know, sadly, there's still going to be some crashes.
Yeah,
that's not going to stop. With electric cars, possibly some fiery crashes. But
yeah, that could be an issue here in Colorado with our freaking wildfires. But
yeah, that would be sad if a lithium-ion thermal runaway started another wildfire. But at least it'll be quiet, and it won't be, you know, like that big diesel rally truck that they built belching black smoke.
Right? The semi-truck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing was dope, though.
it was, but... But with all the environmental protesters there, you know, it was like, oh, well, here's just a smack to your face.
Right. So, yeah, this car, it's a Tesla Model 3 that been wide-bodied, you know, full cage, full aero. It's just, it's a full race car at this point, as much as you could turn a Model 3 into a race car. Probably stock drivetrain, which I don't honestly think it really needs much more. Those things in the performance variants are freaking quick as it is.
Yeah, they're really quick. What's the 0 to 60 time on the performance? It's under 3 seconds, I think.
Probably, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
It's probably going to do really good because it's going to be driven by Dai Yoshihara.
Oh, and Dai Yoshihara is a badass.
Yes.
Huge fan of Dai.
And this is not his first time on the mountain either. He has driven other cars there.
Yeah, I remember watching him drive at Formula Drift Road Atlanta one year. He was doing a chase drive, I think against Frederick Osbo, and lead driver spun. And everyone in the stands went silent, which at Formula Drift Atlanta doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
Because we all thought Dai was going to wreck. Dai put his car into an intentional spin to avoid crashing, never stopped lighting up his tires, drifted around the person he was competing against, and finished his run. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. Dai Yoshihara just, he's a credit to any discipline he drives in.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when he started getting into, like, not drifting-type motorsports, and I think people weren't giving him the credit they needed to, but the man can wheel.
Yeah. I mean, drifters always have to face that when they go into gripping because, yeah, you know, it's a showy kind of automotive gymnastics sport.
Right.
I love it, but it doesn't, the discipline that a grip driver shows, you know, is it's different.
It is, but to drive at the pro F Formula D level,
yeah,
you're a good driver.
You have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I was watching the 12 Hours of Sebring race, the American Le Mans series, and I don't remember his name. It's going to bug me. There was a guy that's normally known as a net for driving NASCAR.
Okay.
Racing a prototype car. And I know people were just like, oh, he's just a NASCAR guy. He can only turn left type thing.
Yeah.
But he was crushing it at Sebring. You know, it's like if you're at the top of your game racing.
In any discipline.
In any discipline.
Yeah.
It may take a little of adjusting, but you're still a good driver.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like back in 2008, Carl Edwards gave Michael Schumacher a run for his money in Race of Champions.
Yeah.
In a Fiat 500, which Michael Schumacher daily drove at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine Michael Schumacher driving a Fiat 500.
that was his daily. I thought that was hilarious.
That's ridiculous.
I guess we all have to get groceries and something.
Right. Well, it's kind of like, you know, if you drive a car that fast, what are you really going to buy for the street that's going to be anywhere near exciting? You might as well just get a normal-ass car.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and the Fiat 500 to Barth is fun to drive.
Yeah, it is a fun car. It's not slow. So I'm excited to see what this Model 3 does at the hill climb this year.
I'm excited to see it.
We are going. They are going to have spectators this year. So we're definitely awesome. Going. We're definitely camping.
And we're definitely going to be one of those reckless people on the side of the track.
Yeah.
Watching cars go right by our face.
They keep you back now. Oh. They have fences. Yeah. I was there for the last year. They let you just like lay in the road basically. Like I have pictures of cars going by and I would literally just put my phone camera on the gravel on the side of the road.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was totally not safe. Not safe at all.
But how cool would it be if you had a broken smartphone right now and you can be like, yeah, this pro driver did that,
right? Yeah, I'm excited to return to Pikes Peak this year and do the camping, watch the racing. It's just always a good time.
I've never been and I can't wait.
Well, you're coming this year.
Awesome.
All right, I think... Are we done with the racing and automotive aftermarket news?
Hey, we made it through one section of our docket.
One section. We still got a little bit to go, though. I want to go into just regular auto biz news, just the regular old car business, because we have more information on the new 2022 Nissan Z.
And I am excited about this, and not just because I started working at Nissan and I have to look at this at the top of my catalog every day.
Do they have that right at the top? Yeah,
this image right here, this yellow Proto Z image, is at the top of the OEM parts catalog.
Oh, nice. Yeah. They're like, here, they keep pushing this.
Yeah.
So some more details got released or leaked, I guess. Supposedly, these are all rumors, of course. So
right, nothing is concrete yet.
Right, But they had those pictures come out of like the spy shots. I'm sure you saw the gray car.
Yeah, yeah, coming off the or it said it was. It looked like it was ready for shipping.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which, in my opinion, it looks so much better in gray than it did in this yellow.
Yeah, you have to do something flashy for the proto. But yeah, there's a reason I didn't buy the bright blue BRZ.
Yeah, I mean, I like bright flashy colors normally, but I don't know, this gray just works. And the one angle you can get those wraparound 300ZX style taillights more.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, that is so good. The back three quarter view of this car is just on point, in my opinion.
See, it's funny because my favorite aspect is the front end.
Yeah.
It looks like a modern 240Z.
Yeah.
And I think that 240Z would look like one of the most beautiful cars. Like that design, you know, it doesn't kind of have the fenders higher than the hood look,
mm-hmm.
but I'm okay with that.
It's
a modernized version.
It does still kind of slope down from the windshield a little bit, doesn't it?
And they left in the little hump that they added in 2008 when they put the HR motor in the 350Z.
Yeah.
Which I'm a huge fan of that. I'm excited about this car because the Supra was everything I wanted except offering a clutch pedal.
It was everything I wanted except it's not a Toyota.
I'm okay with the fact that it's a BMW.
Yeah, I know. You don't care. Yeah, I hate it.
But you're a professional mechanic and you watch them leak oil all over your shop floor all of the time.
Yeah. And I'm just like, no, come on, Toyota. You can do better. But the Z, it will be competing with the Supra because it's supposed to make 400 horsepower out of the VR30.
VR30 DETT.
DDTT.
DDTT. So there's no E. What does that mean?
So if I remember correctly, the first D is dual cam.
Okay.
E stood for electronic injection. Now it's direct injection.
Okay. All right.
And then twin turbo.
Man, that's cool. So they added have they done that before? A DD? Have they done a direct injection platform like that? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. All the new Nissan engines, the MR, there's an MR20 DDTT or MR20 DD. Sorry. There's no T's on those. The MR16 DDT was in the Juke.
Okay.
I'm really pulling Nissan engine codes on my ass here at this point. Then, of course, the VR38 is a DDTT.
That's a DD, not a DE.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because I think it is, because the direct injection.
Okay.
But yeah, so like I said, and it's been pretty much revealed at this point, that underpinnings are still very 370Z-ish, but I guess they've been massaged a lot. There's a lot of more aluminum, I guess some carbon fiber in there too.
And like you were saying, keeping it down, keeping that old chassis allows them to sell this thing for under $40,000.
Yes.
Which means
$35,000 starting point is supposedly where it's going
to
be.
That's going to be priced to, the price point competes with the 8.6 chassis.
Yeah.
And the power competes with the Supra.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be really neat. And that's going to... These rivalries have always brought the best out of these engineering groups. Like in the 90s, we had the RX-7 versus the 300Z versus the 4th-gen Supra.
Yeah.
And all three of those cars were just excellent, excellent sports cars. And I think that the rivalry is part of the reason that that existed. You know, they also all lied about their power numbers.
Yeah. Well, because they had to of some weird gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, they said that none of us will produce a car with over 300 horsepower, and then all of them produced cars with over 300 horsepower.
Well, they're just like, we just put 295 on the ticket, and it's fine.
Yeah, and your insurance is cheaper, too.
Right. So, yeah, they start at 35, which severely undercuts the Supra.
Yes.
Which is what it needs, because for the longest time, people were like, why would you buy a 370Z? Like, it's so underpowered, you can get other cars.
Right.
Now, with the more power, the better styling, it's finally up to its price point.
Even exceeds it.
Really. Yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah.
There will be two packages, supposedly. A Type S, which gives you, sway bars, cooling, you know, your track edition, kind of.
Yeah.
And a Type T, which gives you, like, leather, your touring stuff. Then, of course, there's going to be an ST, which I hate as a Fiesta ST owner, which is both. You get, you know, the track stuff and the technology stuff.
And at that point, you're probably spending $50,000, probably, which is what you'd spend on a Supra.
Yeah.
And they're both front engine, rear wheel drive, 3-liter, 6-cylinder cars with two turbos.
Yeah. It's a very close comparison.
Yeah.
Other rumors are... Where did I see this? Oh, new colors coming out supposedly, which will be the proto yellow and a new orange color.
Interesting. I hope they bring back the blue too. Yeah, Alteca blue.
Yeah.
That was such, those 370Zs in that color were so gorgeous.
This car in that color will be so good.
Yeah, with that black top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would look great. I think, honestly, I thought the yellow and the black top were not a great color combo. They look almost like it clashes a little bit.
Yeah. I haven't been a big fan of this proto yellow since it came out. Like you were saying, you know, it needs to be flashy to get the photos and stuff like that. But honestly, I think it'll look better in other colors.
Yeah. Yeah. So. That and orange, I think, would look really cool.
Well, I always love orange. So yeah. I'm probably going to default to that one and be like, oh, man, the orange one. Supposedly, there will be a Nismo version down the line. No convertible this time.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah.
You know what? If they really want to do something cool, they could have a T-top version.
Yeah, they should. They should bring back the T-tops. I mean, Toyota did make that Targa concept.
But that hasn't hit production, right?
No, it's not going to. That was just a SEMA car, I'm pretty sure. But they did at least play it up a little bit. They're like, see, Targa.
Yeah.
And it did look so good, too. Yeah.
It looked just like the Mark IV Supra
that
came into this century.
Yeah. So, yeah, come on, Nissan. Give us some T-tops. Yeah. Do it. Do it, you cowards.
Yeah, it's okay. We're used to leaky seals. Just make them last a couple years.
Yeah, it's fine. And then I don't know if I mentioned, no 400Z. It's just going to be the Nissan Z.
Which I know you were really happy about.
Yes.
Because every Z since the beginning of Zs has always been named after the displacement of its engine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the first Z to break tradition because they don't want to go backwards.
Yeah.
And so I understand that. And it's a cool way to keep the Z name alive.
I mean, I kind of get it. They're like, well, no, the number always only goes up. It's like stocks. Stocks only go up.
Right.
But no, like the people you're selling this car to, if you called it a 300ZX, would know.
They would. They would know what it means.
Then again, I always, you know, overestimate how many actual enthusiasts are out there buying these cars. And the truth is there's a lot of people that wander in a dealer and go, oh, that looks cool. What's that?
Right.
You know, so.
Which that's, you know. Nissan had to think of that. They had to be like, okay, this is going to be parked in front of every dealership for the people who come in and buy an Armada.
Right.
For to haul their kids around.
Exactly.
This gets you in the door.
Yep. That's the, what do they call that?
A halo car.
Halo car, yep.
Yeah. Which the GTR is kind of their halo car now, but they're so restrictive with, you have to be specially certified by Nissan to sell the GTR, obviously to work on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you have to keep staff in your dealership just to regularly deal with GTRs.
Yeah. And honestly, the GTR is kind of like they still sell them, but it's kind of they're not pushing it anymore. You know, I feel like they're just it's kind of like what they did with the 370Z. They're like, yeah, we still make them, but,
yeah,
you know, we're not actually advertising them at all.
Yeah. And kind of it's the Frontier, too. I didn't realize the Frontier hasn't changed since 2004.
Yeah. Nissan is the king of just like, yeah, we'll just make it forever.
It works and people like it.
Right.
We're going to sell it, which I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that you can still buy a 370Z when honestly, it's kind of a car from a different era at this point.
It is really,
you know, it's in this world of flappy paddle gearboxes and electric cars. You can still go buy an NA manual 370.
Mm-hmm.
That's really neat.
Oh, that was the other thing. The automatic transmission option, which of course it will have an automatic transmission option, is
as long as it's just an option.
It's an option. It's no longer that Nissan 7-speed.
Okay.
They are moving to a Gretschrag, or maybe it was it was some other brand, but it's a 9-speed transmission.
Not a CVT. Thank you, Nissan.
Yeah, at least it has gears. But yeah, because the leaked gray photos, that thing is actually an automatic. You can see the shifter down there.
Yeah.
The weird like computer mouse looking shifter.
Yeah, it does look like a computer mouse.
Right.
I think the article says it's an airfoil style, but that's too fat to be an airfoil.
That's a computer mouse for sure. Let me just select drive real quick.
Click.
But supposedly that's supposed to be a really good 9-speed. So at least you'll get that, and, you know, it's still a converter, torque converter, automatic. It's not a dual clutch or anything like that, but...
But the serious people are going to buy the manual.
Yeah, and at least if you do in the future have to get an automatic one, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world.
And they probably didn't want to have to, you know, pay for the cost of replacing all the CVTs under warranty, right? To run this thing as a CVT, knowing how heavy-footed the customers are.
Nissan wants those rear-wheel drive CVTs. They just haven't been able to do it yet.
I mean, the plus side, until they break, when you put your foot down in a CVT, especially if it's a boosted one, it'll stay in boost forever.
Right? CVTs are actually really good. The problem is people hate them, so they program them to quote-unquote shift.
Right, which makes it, it adds wear.
Which adds wear and adds, like, just gets rid of the thing that it's good at, which is keeping it in the power band and keeping it in good gas mileage.
Yeah.
But anyways, CVTs, good idea, bad execution.
Well, they're not going anywhere, so.
No, we're just going to get more and more of them because they are more efficient.
That's an example of capitalism kind of, trumping engineering in that sense.
Right. Well, it's like, hey, we need to meet these standards, so here we go.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, we're going to get a new Nissan Z car soon. It's so exciting. And other exciting car news, potentially. We don't actually know yet. The 5th of next month, Toyota and Subaru are going to be doing a press release unveiling a new car. Now, the default is, well, of course, they're going to unveil the new 86.
Right, because the 2022 BRZ has been around for a while.
Right. But the thing is, there's been rumors that Akio Toyota has delayed the 86 because he wants it to feel different enough from the Subaru BRZ. There's rumors that, like, it's going to be the same power and everything like that, but they want it to feel different when you drive it.
I wonder how they're going to accomplish that.
I'm assuming, like, springs, struts, sway bars, that kind of stuff.
Which is kind of what they did with the original. They said that the Toyota version favored oversteer and the Subaru version favored understeer.
Yeah. Which, I remember them saying that, which I don't know if that was really all that true, but
I can say my BRZ feels more stable. I've driven FRSs that are easier to slide around.
Okay.
And at high speeds, the BRZ feels pretty stable, which is, you know, it reminds me of driving an older M car, which ran staggered tires, mm-hmm. and the BRZ runs squared setup. So,
yeah.
So they did all that with suspension, which was really, pretty impressive.
Really skinny squared.
Yeah.
Skinny-ass Prius tires.
Yep.
So with the 86 possibly not being the 86, that's bringing up the rumor mill. The president or the guy who runs the Gazoo Racing part of Toyota, you know, GR Yaris, that's Gazoo Racing.
Yeah.
He's going to be at this press release. And there was a rumor that Toyota and Subaru were building some sort of hatchback car.
See, that would be cool because we haven't had a WRX hatchback in quite a while.
True.
And even if it's called something else, Subaru does an all-wheel drive hatchback,
mm-hmm.
and there's a Toyota version too. I mean, we need those. We need more all-wheel drive turbocharged hot hatches.
We do. So here's my theory. What does Toyota make that is an all-wheel drive hot hatch?
Sounds familiar. Right? I think something maybe that was mentioned in our first podcast.
Right. The GR Yaris.
Yeah.
You know? And what does Subaru do? Well, they do all-wheel drive performance cars.
Yes.
Okay. And it's a small car. So here's my theory. This is not going to happen, but I want to see it happen. Subaru, a 2022 Subaru Justy STI.
Justy.
You remember the little tiny cars?
No, I don't remember those.
You don't remember Subaru Justy? I think that's the right one. These were back in the day, back when Subaru was just like, they were making weird-ass cars.
Oh, okay.
Subaru Justy. It's a little two-door hatchback, all-wheel drive. They were just these square-bodied little Econo cars.
Sending this into the 21st century would be really cool.
Right? Subaru, bring back the Justy. Call it the Justy STI. Have it just be a GR Yaris and just print money.
Yeah, print money. Give it both fuel injection systems again.
Yes. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Just do it, Subaru. If they come out and just give us the GR Yaris, even if it's in a Subaru, I don't care, that would be absolutely amazing.
I would love to see an all-wheel drive hatchback like that. That would be neat because I hate that the WRX doesn't come with that anymore.
Right.
Sedan only. And the WRX is great, but yeah, I want a hatch.
They're good cars, but they're also, that's another car that's kind of behind the times at this point, even with the new engines that they're going to be getting supposedly.
Yeah, they've announced that they're going to come out soon. I don't know when that's actually going to happen.
Yeah. They're still behind the times. They've gotten big. They've gotten fat. You know, We need a small little hatchback all-wheel drive car again.
Yeah, then, you know, slot it, price it underneath those.
Right.
You know, make it an, you know, so as inexpensive as you can make it, but still give me a turbo.
Yes. So the thing is, though, most likely what I want to happen isn't going to happen. I don't think we're getting the GR Yaris, even if it's in Toyota form or Subaru form. I don't think we're going to get any sort of hot hatch out of this press release. What I think is going to happen is an electric car.
Hey, it could be a hatchback electric car.
That's probably what it's going to be. Probably going to be some sort of economy hatchback electric, or maybe not even economy, but like it's going to be some sort of electric car in joint collaboration between Subaru and Toyota. I almost guarantee that's what it's going to be. I don't know why Gazoo Racing would be there, though. That's the only thing throwing a wrench in my suspicions.
I mean, we were talking about how electric cars are going to be the future of several racing disciplines.
Right.
Imagine something with that short of a wheelbase with Toyota and Subaru R&D behind it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the articles I wrote for back at Circuit 94 when I was writing for them, I think the first article I wrote for them was where are all the electric sports cars.
Yeah.
You know, and so if we could have like a electric hot hatch, like, did we discuss the Versa last episode?
We talked about your Versa.
But the Versa hot hatch they had in Japan?
Oh, I think we talked about it after we wrapped.
Okay.
I don't know if we put it in the episode.
So yeah, Nissan does make a Versa hybrid electric, like, hot hatch Nismo edition in Japan. So, like, it's starting to kind of become a thing.
Yeah.
They're kind of trying.
Yeah.
So if anybody's going to do it, it's Japanese makes.
Yeah.
You know?
And Subaru and Toyota, they have backing. Subaru has huge manufacturing backing. Mm-hmm. Toyota has a tremendous amount of money devoted to research and development.
Yeah.
Between the two of them, they've proven they can do something really, really capable. They can just between the two of them change the future of the auto industry by releasing the right thing.
Yeah. And if anybody's going to develop electric cars, Toyota has the most experience with cars with big batteries at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm curious to see what this is going to be. It could be the new 86. It could be some sort of crazy hatchback. It could be an Econo hatchback. It could really be anything.
But I think no matter what, it's something to get excited about.
Yeah, even if we get the new Toyota 86, you know? Let's see what that one looks like. Let's see how it looks different from the BRZ.
And I hope they don't nerf it so it doesn't compete with the four-cylinder Supra.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what I worry about because, like, right now, say I go, you know, to a Toyota dealer and I'm one of the people who would buy an automatic 86. I'm not one of those people, but say I was. I would be distracted by the four-cylinder Supra.
Yeah.
Because for a little bit more money, you get a nicer interior. You know, it is a BMW engine, so you're going to run into more
reliability issues. Common consumer doesn't know that.
That's true.
It has a Toyota badge on the engine cover. That's all they know.
And you're looking at an 86, you're looking at a four-cylinder Supra. You're like, these are both four-cylinder rear-wheel drive cars with automatic transmissions. Why wouldn't I spend a little bit more to get the leather seats and the nicer interior?
True. It's going to really come down to how big of a price difference that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, the 86 has been climbing and they released the four-cylinder Supra to come down from that price. So.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? If Toyota's going to compete with anybody, compete with yourself.
Yeah.
Make just a bunch of really cool products and let us decide which one's the coolest.
Which that's kind of how Toyota behaves anyway. They behave as if they have no competition.
Right. Toyota does compete with themselves a lot.
Yeah. But I think that's a good thing. I mean, if it says that, you know, obviously not from an economic standpoint, but they have the money to do it.
Right.
So as consumers, we get more options.
Yeah. And that's always a good thing, especially in today's world where it seems like options are drying up a little bit more and more every day.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll throw another pipe dream into this announcement.
Okay.
Boxer engined MR2.
Ooh, that is a pipe dream.
It is. It's a cheap Porsche.
Yeah, but, well, man, can you imagine like a cheap Porsche Cayenne, or not Cayenne?
Cayman.
Cayman. Yeah. I always get Cayenne and Cayman confused.
Which is hilarious because the names are so similar.
It's completely different
sports
vehicles.
Car, one's an SUV.
There were rumors for a long time after the FRS came out that they were going to do an MR2 and it was going to be even cheaper than the FRS. Which I was like, how the fuck are you going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even working with Lotus, I don't know how you do that.
Right. But yeah, no, that would, if yours comes true, I'm just as happy as the GRRs at that point, honestly. So
yeah, that would be fantastic. Even if it was NA only, I would be very happy to see
that. Yeah, that would be dope.
Yeah.
You know what? I just thought of this. You know what the problem is about me talking so much shit about the GR Yaris? If they do release it, yeah, I have to buy one.
You do. You're obligated.
I am at this point. People are going to be like, well, you talk shit. You better buy one.
Yeah, here it is. Spend the money.
I don't want to spend the money.
Well, I'll match it. And if my pipe dream comes true, I'll buy the MR2.
Okay, that works. And all right, I think we actually got through most of our talking points.
Nice.
People might have heard that I was kind of rushing through some stuff, but I'm like, I want to get them all.
Yeah.
It's like Pokemon.
We're getting more efficient. Yeah. Like Pokemon. Got to catch them all. Got to catch all those talking points.
Yes. Like I said, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out now. Now that spring's ramping up and stuff.
Yeah. And by all accounts, COVID is on the way down. You know,
it's what they say.
That's what they say.
Supposedly we're lifting the mask mandate here in Colorado next month.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that yet.
I don't know how that's going to go, but
yeah, we'll see.
Cause I'm like, I think it's a little early to do that still. People like, yeah, we're getting vaccinations out there, but a lot of people aren't vaccinated still. Yeah,
a lot of people are blatantly refusing it.
That too. But even the people like me who want one, I still haven't got one.
Yeah. Same here. I considered flying back to Tennessee to get one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it easier to get in Tennessee?
I know doctors back there.
Ah. Nah, that's probably a good thing to know.
Yeah.
That's good people to know. That's like knowing a mechanic, you know? Everybody should know a doctor, too.
They say mechanics and doctors have very similar mindsets.
Yeah.
Because you have to diagnose and fix problems involving complex interrelated systems.
Right. The only difference is if I mess up, then I don't have to tell somebody I killed their father.
Not unless the car crashes.
True. True. I could mess up that bad. So any project car updates?
So my 240's back on the ground.
Sweet.
You know, just did the fan belt. Thought I was going to need to do a power steering pump, but the new belt topping it off, the wine's gone away. My steering's lighter now. It's sitting on those new Roto grids, they feel great. I have a great set of Sparkos that I had it on, which were more fashionable. You know how offset, people love their offset. These grids are more practical. And the hand cooks that I have them sitting on, the grip is so good, I'm going to put a set of them on my BRZ.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they even break predictably. You know, because I had to go out and do donuts after I fixed it.
Of course.
And I'm not going to say where I did those donuts.
No, of course not.
They broke really quickly, and because I'm running a narrower wheel, I didn't have to stretch the tires to fit under the car, so the transition from drift to grip is a lot more predictable.
Nice.
Which I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. What were the hand cooks you were running?
They are Aventas, but they're the all seasons.
Oh,
they're not the summer tires.
Huh. So you're getting good results out of an all season. That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted something that wouldn't just completely shred when I started sliding.
Yeah.
And all seasons tend to, they take a little abuse.
Yeah, they last a little longer, a little higher tread wear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, if you put the 200 tread wear tires I have in the Fiesta on that thing, you'd smoke through them so fast.
I could probably destroy a set of those in 15 minutes.
Probably. Yeah. And that's no fun.
No.
We don't have the budget for that.
No, we don't. I wish we did, but right. We don't.
Yeah, so you brought the 240 today.
I did. It's sitting in the parking lot. We're going to head over to the Nissan meet at Empire Nissan on Wadsworth here in a little bit.
Yeah, that should be. We actually have a car to bring.
Yeah.
And your hat, which I'll post a picture of that hat to Instagram. That hat is amazing. That's perfect for this meet and for your car.
Yeah, a little rice paddy hat with Nismo on it.
Yeah. Is it? I have to say, is that racist?
You know, I don't know if that's considered cultural appropriation.
And I don't know either.
I was worried when I moved here that it would be.
Yeah.
And then I saw some construction workers on the side of the road wearing that style of hat.
Oh, okay.
And to be honest, if it's not too windy, it's a great sun hat. It's lighter than your regular wide brim, and it's more comfy than a ball cap.
Huh.
You don't get hat hair when you wear these.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, there's a reason they were made for a long time. you know?
Yeah.
They're functional.
The only downside is it gets windy here in Colorado a lot, and these things are like parachutes.
Just fly off your. That's why you got the chin strap.
Yep. It strangled me a few times.
Oh, well, that's cool, man. I'm glad to hear that they got cars back on the road and
yeah,
start having some fun with it again.
Yeah, we can put a clutch in it in a couple weeks.
Oh, fuck. Man, why do I keep, we gotta keep working on your cars? I gotta start telling people no. I'm just kidding. We gotta get that car going so we can do some drift events.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's, if I go wide open when the engine's cold, I get that slingshot RPM thing.
Oh, yeah.
It shoots up and goes, and then it catches. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want that. That's no good.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're gonna have to teach me how to drift at some point.
Hell yeah, man.
Go with IMI and hang with those guys and spin out a few times.
Yes. Put it in the dirt. Hopefully not running into a BMW.
No, I'll try to be on clear track when I'm learning. Personally, I don't have any updates yet. I am working on my sim rig. We're going to hopefully try to get that done this weekend. So we'll have some sim racing content on the YouTube channel.
Nice.
I will have a video up on the YouTube channel here soon of me hunting down the seat I'm using. I went to the junkyard to get a seat.
Nice.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't.
That's right. I don't work with you anymore.
But it's a shame we're not in the same shop every day.
Right?
But it just means we have more to talk about when we sit down to record.
This is true. I'll have to show you the seat. I'll send you a picture of it. It's really dope.
I can't wait to see that Just Browsing video.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. There was some weird stuff in the junkyard this time. So I have my opinions on many things. So no project car update yet. Hopefully Iggy will be getting work done here soon because, man, I've been neglecting that car.
Well, you just haven't had time.
It's been crazy.
Hopefully with this new tech getting in at Aspen, you guys will, the workload will be more distributed.
Right.
Is he going to take over the American side of things?
Yes, for the most part, but kind of doing everything too. So
right.
Kind of, you know, how we do with each tech kind of having their specialty, but if we get in stuff, you got to do it.
Right. Yeah, I got to satisfy the customer.
Right. I think also it's been really busy because everybody got their stimulus checks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Our shops, yeah, Nissan's service drive has been kind of busy too.
Yeah.
It was, I think it was Monday. We just went nonstop.
Yeah.
There wasn't, you know, how the auto industry between noon and one, there's a lull usually because that's when all the technicians go to lunch.
Right.
I sat down at 9 and I worked nonstop until 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just pricing stuff out. So it's been kind of wild.
Yeah. I think everybody just got their stimulus check and like, well, time to put the money into the car finally.
Yeah.
You know, because people are going to be holding on to their cars for a while. So that's why used car prices are up too.
God, the Craigslist prices are ridiculous.
I know. I spent a bunch of time last night, like I was telling you before we recorded, like, man, I think I want just a daily beater so I'm not driving the Fiesta every day
in
Denver traffic, possibly getting smashed up or
Hamden,
running over a nail
Hamden
or something.
Is like a demolition derby.
It is. It's ridiculous. but yeah, so I was just looking for like a beater and it's like everything, you can't get a decent car for less than like, I mean, even a decent beater.
Yeah.
Like $2,500, $3,000.
But you used to be able to get one for under $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What you pay, said you paid $200 for Iggy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, man, I'm going to have to do some searching for sure.
On the plus side, anyone who's sitting on a lot of used cars.
Right. Now's the time to sell.
Yep. The market is in your favor.
Right. So I don't know what I'm going to end up with. I was kind of looking at a bunch of old, weird GM cars. Front-wheel drive GM cars.
Okay.
So that's what I came from in Michigan. You know, I'm just kind of like, they were shit cars, but they were built like tanks. So. Yeah.
Those old like Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 3,800 powered, 3.8 liter that makes like 200 horsepower somehow.
With a factory rear sway bar just because it had to have it or else it wasn't going to stay on the road.
Oh, yeah. Well, those suspension designs were terrible.
Yeah.
But they just float down the road, man, because if I take a 470 every day. I'm on the highway a lot. So like nice big highway cruiser, I think, would be on point.
Oh, and those old Pontiacs and old Buicks, those, you know, like you said, they were garbage new, but they are comfy.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
They drive down the road like a boat.
Yeah, and it's not the kind of thing you worry about in a parking lot.
No. Smash it up. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's like, ding it with your door.
Yeah, it's like do more damage to your car than it will mine.
Yeah.
Still haven't got any email yet, but if you want to send in some email and get a hold of us here at the show, contact@religionofspeed.com. We're looking for feedback on the show, you got questions about cars, racing, anything like that, we can answer, or you want to give a shout outs to anybody, you know. I actually do want to do a shout out today to Pikes Peak International Raceway.
Nice.
So last weekend went racing, man, just the series they run there, they've gotten it down really well. The first, like a few years ago, you know, they were having a lot of timing issues and like, you know, teething issues of starting a new series still. But they got that thing running like a well-oiled machine now. All the people on track work their ass off all morning. You know, they're out there setting up cones and doing the start timing and stuff like that. And the thing is, like, unlike SCCA, where they do, you know, you run one, you work one, and you spectate one, and they do three sessions.
Yeah.
The people at PPIR, they don't drive. They're out there, you know, doing their volunteers, basically, out there handling the track and stuff. So the fact that they do that and they do as good a job as they do, I want to give a shout out to them for running that series. It's taught me a lot. I have a ton of friends from there at this point. Like, yeah, just yeah. Good job, PPIR, man.
And their attitude, at least the time I went, was great.
Yeah, they're just the most chill people.
Yeah, like I've definitely gone into places where the people were paid to be there.
Yeah.
Where the attitude was a lot worse.
Right.
And, you know, those people were helpful when I showed up my first time. They told me everything I needed to do. And you know, one of them even rode shotgun with me on my first lap just to familiarize me with the course.
Yeah.
Great people there.
Yep. All the workers, all the people that come out to the series to race are also super dope people. If you haven't been yet, I talk it up all the time. PPIR, Pikes Peak International Raceway, Track Attack, Google it. I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. Come out and drive your car, man. It's fun.
Have some fun.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add before we call it a day, Chris?
No, I think this was a pretty great show. I'm looking forward to getting out to Empire Nissan.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll run into some people listening. Hopefully we'll run into some heretics.
Yeah. I'll post it again on all the social medias before we take off, but hope to see you guys there. And until next time, this has been the Religion Speed Podcast. Peace out.